if you are trying to get into the housing market at the moment, it's not only spiralling costs that put you at a disadvantage compared with home buyers a generation ago. There's a thing called the mortgage tilt, which describes the ability of mortgage holders to pay off their loans earlier. But that goal of owning your own home outright sooner is also getting harder to achieve. Lucy Ellis helped to popularise the concept of mortgage tilt when she worked as a housing specialist and then chief economist at the Reserve Bank. These days, Lucy is chief economist at Westpac and joins me now. Lucy, welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks, Sally. Great to be here.
In plain terms, what do you mean when you talk about mortgage tilt?
Mortgage tilt is something economists have known about since the 70s. Franco Modigliani, who is a very well-known academic economist, really first talked about the idea. The essential point is when inflation is high, yes, you're paying a very high interest rate, and so the mortgage you can service for a given repayment is small. But of course, your income in dollar terms is also growing quickly. So that same mortgage repayment becomes less burdensome very quickly. And indeed, you can then potentially pay off even more as time goes on, as your income grows. When inflation is lower, there are a lot of good things for having low inflation. That's why central banks around the world have low inflation. But you know, the issue is your income grows more slowly in dollar terms. And so the burden of that same repayment is now, you know, easing much more slowly. And of course, that repayment now supports a much bigger mortgage because interest rates are lower, house prices are therefore higher as well, and you have to build up a bigger deposit. But the point about mortgage tilt is how quickly that burden of a fixed dollar repayment fades away as your income grows.
Lucy, what do the numbers tell us about the number of people who own their homes outright or at what age they reach that in years past compared to what the situation looks like now?
Well, Sally, for a long time we've had roughly one third of households renting, one third of households with a mortgage, and one third outright. And, you know, through time that's varied. You know, a percentage point or two, you know, here and there, but it's in round numbers pretty stable. A couple of things have changed, and one, of course, is that we're living longer, and so we're actually settling down at a later age than people did during the 60s and the 50s and the baby boom. And so in some ways it was that 50s and 60s period was the anomaly more so than where we are now. The age at which people first started buying a home was already rising in the 80s before interest rates came down because people were settling down lower. So there's more than one thing going on. But it's absolutely true that people are now buying their first home later, and that's partly because people settle down later and partly because it takes longer to, you know, to build up that deposit. And then oftentimes people are paying it off, you know, right towards the end of their working life rather than sooner. It still pays you to pay off your mortgage ahead of schedule if you can, because, of course, if it's your own home, you're not getting a tax deduction for that. So it's actually, you know, financially very advantageous to pay off ahead of schedule. But people are often doing that right at the point they retire.
With less mortgage tilt, what does it mean for retirement? Are more Australians retiring now with mortgage debt?
We do certainly hear that many people are using their super lump sum to pay off the last of their mortgage. That's not considered ideal from the perspective of, you know, ASIC's regulation of consumer credit. That's not what super is for, but people are sometimes doing that. We don't have hard numbers on it. It's one of those things that's very hard to actually know across the whole household sector. But the fact that people have super lump sums, you know, in many ways they may well be better off not having that mortgage debt anymore once their income stepped down. And, you know, they may have not had a particularly big super lump sum, and, you know, that's actually a decision that some people would make.
And how difficult can things then be if you're carrying mortgage debt into retirement? Because a lot of the ecosystem is based on the assumption that people have finished paying off their loan. For example, the rate of the age pension and so on doesn't really factor in people paying rent.
There is rent assistance for people who are on a pension and privately rent. Obviously, there's not as much public and social housing as there used to be as well, and that's another factor. But it is absolutely true that our welfare system is designed in a way that as long as you own a suitable home, at the point you retire, you know, the pension will actually afford you, you know, a modest but decent standard of living, and that's how it's designed. And, of course, if you've got some super on top of that, that will mean you have a better standard of living in retirement. But it is much harder if you haven't got there. Now, whether you've bought the home, you know, at age 25 or 30, or whether you buy your forever home at 40 and then retire in your mid-60s, is less material to that point. But our welfare system absolutely is designed to have a paid off home at the point you retire.
My guest on Radio National Breakfast is Chief Economist at Westpac, Lucy Ellis, previously Chief Economist at the Reserve Bank. Lucy, another piece of research you're involved in while at the RBA looked at the impact of COVID on demand for homes, in particular on the number of Australians per dwelling. What did you find?
Well, I want to give credit to the team at the RBA. I was just the head of the area. I didn't personally do the work. But what the team at the RBA discovered that was in the detailed data of the labour force survey, you know, the labour force survey asks how many people aged 15 and over live in the home, how many children aged under 15 live in the home. You add the two together, that gives you the number of people. Now, unfortunately, these data aren't widely available. They're only available to government entities and researchers. We can't get that direct data ourselves, you know, over at Westpac or any of the other private banks. But the RBA realised that using these data, they got a very timely measure of what happened. And what happened was in 2020, a lot of adult children went back and lived with mum and dad during the first lockdown, and you saw the average number of people in the household go up. But soon afterwards, it went down, and you know, people went back into their share houses as young adults. You had a lot of offshore overseas students returning to their home country. They tend to live in big share houses, so that reduced the average number of people per household. And also a lot of people said, look, you know, I'm in a big share household. You know, we're all sitting around on JobKeeper because we've got the kind of jobs that you can't do during lockdown. We're all getting on top of each other. By the way, because some people have left and the borders are closed, the rents are lower. And so you did get a little bit of spreading out and, you know, two couples living in a share house, then, you know, one moved out and you had, you know, a couple each in two apartments rather than two couples in two-bedroom apartment. That was only in the major cities. You didn't see the same effect in regional areas. And since then it started to reverse, which is partly the overseas students are coming back, but also rents are now higher and people are voting with their feet about the size of household they are willing to live in to save on costs. So we are seeing those effects. Unfortunately, because it's not a series that's regularly published, we're reliant on the RBA, you know, publishing a graph in their publications. They're not publishing it regularly. We'd be good if they did, but I think it was mostly a post-COVID thing.
What do you think is the biggest misconception about the housing market right now?
One of the misconceptions I've seen for decades is actually related to this idea of mortgage tilt. When we were a high inflation economy, we had high interest rates and therefore low house prices because you could, you know, that repayment that you could afford only supported a small mortgage with high rates. We then became a low inflation economy and the same mortgages, the same repayments covered a bigger mortgage. Therefore, we bid up house prices. Therefore, we bid up household debt. One of the big misconceptions I see is people looking back to the 70s and 80s and saying, look how low debt was. Look how low house prices were. It wasn't different from the perspective of affordability. It's just that it translates into a different price.
Lucy Ellis, it's always really interesting to talk to you. Thank you for joining me this morning.
You're most welcome, Sally. Always happy to help.